Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Hello and welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for October 23rd, 2014, the Your Own Personal Fantasy Land edition. I'm Dan Coyce. I'm the dad of Harper, who is 7, and Lyra, who is 9.
I'm Allison Benedict. I'm the mother of Harry, who is 6, even though I said last week he was, or last episode he was 6, but now he's actually really 6. Oops. Sam, who is 3, and Wally, who's 1.
Welcome. Hi, Allison.
Hey.
On today's show, we will talk to New York Times Your Money columnist Ron Lieber about kids and allowances. How soon, how much, and should you make those ungrateful brats work for it? Then we'll talk about Disney World's new Fantasyland and the modern boutique theme park experience. Plus, triumphs and fails, a Mommy Wars lightning round, and more. We're also launching our Slate Plus bonus segment this episode. Slate Plus members will get a bonus triumph or fail. We'll be joined by Slate's deputy editor, John Swansburg, who's got a brand new daughter. He is just back from his first bout of paternity leave. And he will tell us about a newborn triumph or fail, and Allison and I will make fun of him or praise him, depending. Actually, what we will do is both quietly thank God that we don't have a newborn. To hear that bonus segment, plus bonus segments on all your favorite Slate podcasts, join Slate's membership program, Slate Plus. You'll also get VIP treatment at live events, behind-the-scenes content at Slate, and bonus podcasts like our just-launched American Horror Story Weeklies with Brian Lauder and Willa Paskin. It's free to try for 2 weeks, so go to slate.com/plus to sign up. All right, triumphs and fails. Allison, what do you got today?
I have a triumph. Okay, Dan, would you agree with me that a lot of parenting is picking your battles?
Yes. What hill do you want to die on? It's a question we ask a lot.
Okay. So when it comes to clothes, I pretty much let the boys wear whatever they want. I do not take them to the store because that would be a crazy thing to do with
them.
But I order everything online from Old Navy, and I just buy things that I know they will like, which means I don't buy anything that's too cool or stylish. And if I ever do...
Just normcore, straight up normcore.
Yeah, normcore. They're very normcore. And if I do buy something that's like a cool, you know, cute little hipster shirt, it just sits in their closet forever and it never gets worn. So I've learned my lesson there. When I take them shoe shopping, they're allowed to choose their own shoes, which means that they choose like these horrendous... I guess you don't have boys, so you don't know this, but like boys' shoes, they just keep getting like more lights on them and springs. Like if they have lights and they have springs... My children choose them. And I don't really understand the parents whose kids wear Chucks. Like, do those parents make the kids choose the Chucks, or those kids just have good taste? Anyway, my point is that my kids look horrible all the time, and that's fine. I've decided that that's fine. However, today was picture day at Harry's school, and I started off this morning gently letting him know that he needed to wear either a nice button-down shirt or a nice sweater. And he seemed somewhat amenable to that. But when he actually got dressed, he put on a nice, this is, quote, nice sweatshirt, which was just a regular sweatshirt.
Right.
So John immediately said, Harry, take off your sweatshirt. You need to wear a button-down shirt for picture day. And Harry was on the floor through having a clothes fit, crying. And I did my normal, like, pull John into the other room and, let's not make a thing of this. Do you want to start off the day like this? Is it really such a big deal? And John said we had to stand our ground on this, that Harry is 6 years old, which he always says. He's not a baby. He's 6 years old. As though, like,
He actually is six years old.
He is 6 years old.
Yeah.
But yes, he needs to be able to wear a button-down shirt if we tell him to wear a button-down shirt one day out of the year. So we forced him to wear the button-down shirt, or John did. I mean, I don't know what's happening right now at school, but he left the house okay. He looked very handsome. So I guess it's John's triumph was that we, you know, he picked a battle to wage and won.
Your triumph is that you helped your spouse figure out that this was a battle worth fighting, or your spouse helped you and you accepted that help.
Right.
I feel like that's a triumph as well.
Okay.
Congratulations on your child's picture, hopefully not looking horrible.
Thank you.
Maybe he borrowed a sweatshirt from someone else to put over his button-down shirt. All right.
He did sadly say to me as he was leaving the house, I just want to look like myself, not fancy.
Oh, God. The whole point of picture day is to not look like yourself, Harry. Right. It's to look better. So I have a fail this episode.
Okay.
It's spectacular.
Is it a Disney fail?
We didn't even have to get to Disney yet for our fail to occur. So I'll warn everyone in advance, trigger warning, it all turned out okay. But in fact, we lost our child less than 5 minutes after landing in Orlando, in the Orlando airport. It turned out for about half an hour. So we got off the plane and Alia and her mom, Kiki had to go to the bathroom. So they went to the bathroom and me and, the kid's grandfather and the kids were headed toward baggage claim. But then all of a sudden Lyra said, oh, I have to go to the bathroom too. And I said, well, great. We'll just go back into the bathroom and find mom and Kiki and then meet us down there. And she said, sure. And she went into the bathroom and we walked off and we stood in line for the air train. Then we got on the air train, and then the little air train went from the terminal to baggage claim, and then we exited past security, then we went down to baggage claim, and then we waited a little while for our bags to come, and then Alia and Kiki came walking up, and I said, oh, where's Lyra? And they said, what do you mean, where's Lyra? You have Lyra. And I said, oh, well, that's too bad.
What did you say?
I said,
what was the feeling in your stomach?
It was, like, total terror. Like, it was both terror and annoyance mixed in a way that made me feel guilty. It was like terror that Lyra was lost and was scared, and annoyance that I was probably gonna have to go back through security just to find my kid. Right. There are a lot of good reasons to go through security, but come on. I went to a house phone immediately and I picked it up and like dialed zero. And then I was put on hold. So then I hung up the house phone and I started booking towards baggage claim or away from baggage claim back towards the air train. And there was Lyra with a security guard. She had done the right thing. She had found a security guard when she didn't see anyone in the bathroom. And she told them what was going on. And the security guard, bless his heart, did the right thing and didn't just like keep her somewhere. He took her to baggage claim where he assumed we would be. And we were there. And it all worked out great. But it was an absurd fail of me to not actually confirm that my child was under the care of anyone in the busy Orlando airport for a period of roughly 30 minutes.
Was she scared?
She apparently was not scared. She, in fact, seemed really pleased with herself that she had pulled it off. Like it was like a caper she'd worked out.
I want to see the movie of what happened during those 30 minutes.
That's right.
Lyra getting a pedicure at the airport spa.
She's getting on one of those massages and
getting
the massage chairs.
Yeah. Yep.
She had a good time. There were plenty of other fails at Disney, but we can talk about those later.
Okay, good.
So a reminder to all our listeners, if you enjoy Mom and Dad Are Fighting, please tell your friends. Here's this week's scheme for how you can tell your friends. So invite a friend out for coffee, right? And then sit her down and buy her a latte or whatever, and then talk to her about her job and her family and all the stuff that's important to her. And then when she asks you what you are up to, just say, like casually, oh, I've been listening to this podcast. You should listen to it. You know, like, keep it light and be cool. Don't reveal that the whole reason you invited her out for coffee was to tell her about the podcast. But anyways, we want more listeners as we try and plan our very first live show. So please tell your friends over coffee or not over coffee. All right, on to our first segment. This summer, we started giving our kids an allowance. When I was trying to figure out what to give and how, I found a great story in the New York Times with a whole bunch of great options and ideas for helping kids manage their money. That article was by Ron Lieber, the paper's personal finance writer. Ron's writing a book called The Opposite of Spoiled, which comes out in February, and we are very happy to have him calling in from the Tower of News today. Welcome, Ron.
Good to be here.
So, Ron, you've written a bunch of great pieces about just the specific issue of allowance and all the various options there are. But I think the first question that a lot of parents have as their kids are sort of getting towards school age is, when should I actually start giving kids an allowance? Like, what is a good age to start teaching the lessons that allowances teach?
I think it's a good idea to start around first grade, but if kids are asking for a lot of stuff sooner, or if they're talking about money, or if they just have a lot of questions about it, then you can start before then. You know, they sort of need to be able to count to 10 and have a basic understanding of, you know, what the coins are and what the bills are. But there's no hard and fast rule. You know, as long as they're interested, go ahead and do it. And I'd say one other thing, too, if they're not interested by first or second grade, go ahead and do it anyway, particularly with girls, just because there's a lot of data out there that shows that girls have kind of lower expectations for salaries than boys do at a relatively young age, and that parents don't talk to girls as much as they do about boys, and those are statistics we really want to obliterate. Start early, and in particular, pay attention to your girls if you have them.
So giving kids an allowance is less about them wanting money to buy and do stuff with, and more about just the act of starting to teach them about money.
Yeah, I mean, I see money as a teaching tool. People infuse it with all of this meaning, and, of course, there are a lot of feelings associated with money, particularly for grown-ups. Do we have enough? How much is enough? Big cosmic questions. But for kids, we're just trying to teach them how it works and begin to give them, a basic sense of, the difference between wants and needs and, how to begin to control their own desires for stuff. And so it's good to start pretty early.
Do you have a magic formula that you have used with your kids to figure out how much you actually give them?
No, there isn't really a magic formula because it totally depends on what you want them to use it for. So some parents are very strict from a relatively early age on the rules. And if you're strict on the rules, that means that the kids have to buy anything that they want with their allowance money. The things that they need, like their clothes and their books and maybe music lessons, if you define, after-school enrichment as a need, that stuff parents pay for. But if kids are paying for everything that they want, then that's a strict rule. But that means the kids should probably have a little more allowance, because if they're paying for everything that they want, then we want to give them just enough so that they can maybe buy, 20, 30, 40% of what they want, enough so that they're not feeling deprived.
10.
But not so much that they aren't having to make a whole bunch of really hard choices.
How do you feel about tying allowance to chores?
I'm not a big fan of it, although I wouldn't say, don't do it under any circumstances. I just think there's a practical problem with tying allowance to chores. I mean, first of all, chores are something that everybody in the family should do. We're all in this together, and we all ought to pitch in, and the grown-ups don't expect to be paid, so there's no particular reason why the kids should be, too. But there's a practical problem, which is that if you tie allowance to chores, there may come a point when a belligerent teenager, or tween even, decides that they don't want the money anymore. They don't need it, in fact, at which point they will go on strike from their chores and say, that's fine, don't pay me and I won't do the chores, at which point you'll bring the hammer down and make them do the chores anyway. So if the chores are not optional, it's probably best to disassociate the completion of the chores with the distribution of allowance.
I don't know. Bringing the hammer down might be a valuable lesson about the role of labor and labor organization in America.
That's one way to think about it. It depends how big the hammer is.
Right. So I have a question about what the kids do with that allowance once they get it. How do I keep my kids from just spending their allowance on Fun Dip all the time? That's all they want to buy is just like Fun Dip. Yeah. And just like shit, they just want to buy crap. And so I guess more broadly, should I try to talk them out of dumb purchases or should I just be like, well, it's your money?
Well, so there are a couple of different ways to think about this, right? I mean, first is the basic division of the money. And in our house, we, divide the money up between the save jar and the spend jar and the give jar. The give jar, they can give away to any cause or even any person that they want to. If they think somebody in particular is in need or an institution is, off the money goes, no questions asked. As far as save and spend goes, save is for longer-term goals. Spend is for, impulse purchases. So on one hand, I think it's great to let them screw it up royally, right? Because this is the time when mistakes do not have a lot of long-term impact. The stakes are, in fact, pretty low at this point. So it's good to let them, make purchases on things that they might regret. On the other hand, many parents quite reasonably want to set at least some limits. No double piercing, no tattoos, no four-figure accessories on the three-figure automobile, right? And so all of those things are perfectly appropriate depending on your values. But if something just seems wasteful as opposed to harmful, I don't know if I would try and talk the kids out of it. Far better for them to learn the valuable lesson of having wasted money on something that they really didn't like or want much, 2 minutes after they got it, and let that memory sink in and be there in their memory for the long term.
So in terms of teaching your kids about the value of money, and you're saying it's okay to let them waste a little, but the old line, money doesn't grow on trees. Is there a better line than that to give to your kids? Because I feel like, you know, I'm at the point with my oldest where he's in first grade, and they actually, I don't know if this is everywhere or just, well, I guess it's everywhere with Common Core. They are no longer teaching money concepts in first grade because they think the kids aren't ready to understand them. They've pushed it to second grade. But we're trying to teach it in the home, and I feel like I'm not getting anywhere. Like, he really doesn't understand when we buy him something that it was with money that we earned and that it's not okay to just break it.
Well, I guess a couple things about that. I mean, if you're looking for kind of ready-made maxims, you know, I might respond to
that. Oh, yeah.
That's all I want.
The same question, that I pose to my daughter when she asks about something that she's interested in. Is this something that you need, or is this something that you want? And then, you know, sort of a subset of those questions. Right? If it's something that you need and we agree that you need it, well, what's the right amount of money to spend on it? We do something that we refer to, although my wife doesn't always agree with me on this, something that I refer to as the Land's End line. So when it comes to clothing, if there's something that she needs, like rain boots, you know, my question is, well, what would it cost at Land's End, right? You know, good mid-priced, you know, retailer known for, good Midwestern values and relatively high quality. Right. So if what she wants is going to cost more than it would cost at Land's End, then she pays the difference between the Land's End cost and the cost of the item that she wants. So is it a want or is it a need? What would it cost at Land's End or L.L. Bean or REI? You know, name your favorite, you know, retailer that you think charges appropriate prices.
I may define down your Land's End rule to another Midwestern retailer, Target.
Even better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I like that notion that you start to give kids a sense of the scale of different kinds of items, you know, that just because it's a pair of boots doesn't mean it costs a certain amount, that there are certain levels and scales within that, within the range that a boot might happen in.
So one thing that you might consider that a reader of mine suggested to me is asking kids who know enough math to do addition and subtraction and, you know, some basic division to figure out what the hours of fun per dollar is on any given desired item. Because, something like a deck of cards, you know, can deliver great fun for years and years on end. And I think the reason why Legos are such a phenomenon is that those tend to be lasting, right? Kids play with them for a long time, whereas, you know, the sort of electronic toy or gizmo of the season, you know, particularly for younger kids, it often is, you know, interesting or enticing for, you know, several hours, and then you know what it can do, and your kid has moved on, or it's broken, and you never bother replacing it, and it becomes, you know, part of the plastic junk pile, right? And so try and do that math ahead of time and think about, you know, how much am I really going to get out of this? And that becomes a useful discussion board.
All right, one last question for you, Ron. You know, one thing that's been really useful this summer with my kids is actually just seeing the money, right? Seeing it in their wallets, seeing it in their save jar. How do you navigate, though, around virtual purchases? Like, it's hard for me to convey to my kids the way that, like, apps, for example, cost money even though you don't see the money going anywhere. Is there a way to sort of make that visually more clear to them? Or is it just a matter of physically taking the money out of their wallet and setting it on fire once they decide to buy an app?
Something like that. I mean, unless you want to be covering it with your own credit card and not actually collecting the money from them. But, you know, one thing you might do is, you know, in the moment when they ask for something, they ask for you to arrange for them to get something on their devices or, you know, via, you know, whatever online retailer you're using, literally go and physically take the money at the same time that you're making the purchase, or at least do it in front of them and not when they're still at school or already asleep, so that they know every time that it's happening that the money is disappearing. What happens eventually, or what can happen, is that you can move to a virtual system altogether. I mean, once the kids have had several years of having the cash money in hand, they may be out and about with their own plastic cards, you know, kind of starting in middle school or high school, and you can make an actual virtue of that. You know, they can have their own prepaid card, their own prepaid debit card from a company like FamZoo, which does sort of virtual allowance and chore tracking, or, you know, they can be connected to their own checking account or to your checking account, where, you know, when they make those purchases themselves, the money, in fact, does disappear, and, you know, they can track it on their phone if they want to. You know, that is actual real-world spending that looks an awful lot like it will work when they're out in the world at 24 with their own debit cards and checking accounts.
That is super interesting. All right. Thank you, Ron. You provided an incredible amount of information per dollar.
Thanks, Ron.
Ron Lieber's book, The Opposite of Spoiled, comes out in February. You can pre-order it now. Look for a link on our Mom and Dad Are Fighting show page on Slate. Thanks, Ron.
Thank you.
Usually we answer a listener call, but this week we are changing it up a little. But we still want you to call with questions that you would like to us to answer on the show. If you have a question you want us to answer on the air, give us a call and leave us a voicemail at 424-255-7833. That's 424-255-ROOT. But this week, we are going to change it up into a Mommy Wars lightning round. Because in lieu of calls last episode, we just got a shit ton of emails from parents who strongly disagreed with our suggestion that we both let our babies cry it out to sleep through the night. Everyone was very upset at us. Now, we will get an actual expert here soon to talk with us about infant sleep issues on a future episode. But the response...
I just want to correct the record on something. I said that I let my kids cry it out at 3 months, but it was actually at 4 months.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes a difference.
It doesn't to the people who emailed and said you were a monster for letting them cry it out at all, / before 7 months. But so the whole thing made us realize that, like, we have mostly avoided a lot of the sort of big hot button mommy wars topics. So we thought maybe the best way to handle it would be to just get a lot of them out of the way as shallowly and quickly as possible by declaring for the record where we stand on many of these very important issues. So here comes our mommy wars lightning round. Allison, are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. Allison, home birth or hospital?
Hospital.
Hospital, yes.
Epidural or natural?
Epidural all the way. I would have gotten an epidural if I could have.
Natural all
natural?
The times, yep.
Three kids?
Yep.
Good Lord. Bottle or breast?
Breast, but I don't really care what other people do.
Breast, but we switched to bottle as soon as humanly possible because breastfeeding was awful.
Drinking while breastfeeding?
Yeah, I'm in favor of it generally. It seems like it makes everything easier.
Yes, agree.
Drinking while pregnant?
Yes, in moderation.
Yeah. In fact, we had a great lesson on this from Alia's mom, who had long held to this story that she had been told by a doctor to have one drink per day during her pregnancy. And we thought, oh, that's nice. It helped her relax. And then one time she told us that the day Alia was born, she had her one drink and it was a whiskey sour. It turned out she'd been drinking hard liquor every single day she was pregnant. But it worked out fine. Totally worked out fine.
I don't endorse that. crib or co-sleep?
Crib. Oh, my God. Crib. You?
Crib.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Stroller or carrier?
Stroller or ergo, but I don't like to, I wasn't a big wear the baby in a sling person.
I liked wearing babies on my back, but not in a sling. It made me feel hot all the time.
Cloth or disposable diapers?
Disposable.
Disposable.
Yes. Homemade baby food or jars?
Homemade for the first one, half and half for the second one, the squeezy things all the way for the third one.
Jars for us, and I'm so jealous of people who raised kids in the squeezy things era that came after we had babies.
Yeah, so much better.
Yeah.
Refined sugar.
Yeah, I mean, we wish we didn't, but yeah, they eat it.
Yes, and we don't even think about it.
Okay, sugar cereal.
On vacation.
Yes, for grown-ups.
Montessori or something else?
We did a Montessori school, and Harper liked it, but the person who ran it was a nightmare, and I sort of think it had to do with her Montessori-ness, but I don't know for sure. But anyways, it seemed fine.
Something else, but I don't have a philosophy.
All right. Gender-neutral toys or princesses and trucks?
What they like, and my kids have always liked the gender-normative boy things.
We bought a bunch of gender-neutral toys for both our kids that they did not play with.
Strict napping schedule or loosey-goosey?
Oh, very loosey-goosey. Very, very, very loosey-goosey. Whenever they want to nap is fine with us. And if they don't nap, we survive.
We're pretty strict.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're like 1 o'clock kid, get into bed, and I don't
care
if you scream.
I mean, it's been harder. It's been harder as we've had more kids. But the first one, I was strict to the point of obsessive. My mom used to say that when I would leave the kids with her, I'd be like, at 7:07, give him a bottle. At 7:09, like, but I'm not like that anymore because I can't be. But
right.
I'm not like a... They'll nap in the stroller on the go. I'm not that person.
Okay. Interesting. All right. Vaccinate or don't vaccinate? Just kidding. We will not even dignify this with a discussion.
Stay at home or work?
Whatever you think is best, but I have a secret disdain for people who stay at home. I guess it's not that secret. but I haven't.
I'll leave it at that and not answer the question.
Oh, cop out. Asshole. All right, good job. All our biases are exposed. Send your hate mail to momanddad@slate.com. Next episode, we will be back to answering your questions, so call us and leave a voicemail at 424-255-7833. That's 424-255-RUDE.
Okay, now on to our next segment. Dan Kois and his wife Alia recently took their children to Disney World, where Dan realized that the most magical place on Earth had changed significantly from when he was a kid, for good and for bad. Dan wrote about these changes in a piece for Slate, and now, in another effort to be able to expense the trip by making it, quote, for work, he's going to tell us all about it on today's show.
I saved all those receipts.
Okay, Dan, before you regale us, tell me the most important part, which is related to our last conversation somewhat. How much did it cost?
Oh, God. Oh, man. Just the park tickets to see the Wizarding World of Harry Potter before we even got to Disney World were like $160 per person for a single day. And then like extrapolate from that onward to my entire life savings.
Okay. Before you tell us what Disney's like today, tell me going in what your memory of Disney was and why you wanted to take your girls.
So I went when I was Lyra's age, basically, maybe 10. And I, you know, was a kid who was not into roller coasters and was scared of them and got motion sick easily. But I really like bought into the sort of magic of the place. Like even at 10, I was into the characters and seeing them walk around. And I really loved just sort of this notion of this huge place where everything is magical and everywhere you turn, something cool is happening. And there are places to explore and places to go and things to do and rides to go on. And I loved sort of that sort of mass experience of it. Like that really meant a lot to me being in this place that seemed like the ideal world in America. And so I recognize that there are a lot of problems philosophically with the Disney Corporation and with Disney World. I recognize that there are a lot of weird things about it. I recognize that it is an unbelievably expensive experience out of the reach of a lot of people, but it still is a thing that we really wanted to do with our kids. We thought that they would love it. We wanted to have that experience with them. We wanted to get them early now while they still would maybe be into the magic a little bit, not when they are sullen teens. When we went, I was 10 and my brother was 15. And one of the things I really remember vividly about the trip is like him just yelling at my parents and them yelling at him and him just storming off into the Magic Kingdom for like a whole day and then coming back to the Polynesian at 9 o'clock and then being like, well, did you have a nice time, Dennis? And him saying, yes.
We also stayed at the Polynesian. My memory of Disney is great, but I mean, it was a great trip. But the one thing that I think stands out is we went on a lot of trips when I was younger, but this was really the only one that was just for us. Like every other trip was, you know, planned in some way to delight us, but mostly in a way like your camping trip to Yellowstone,
right.
An idea that you guys wanted to do and fit your kids into that and hope that they would love it as well.
Right. When I was a kid, our trip to Disney contrasted greatly with the trip we took a year later, which was to Colonial Williamsburg, where all my mom wanted to do was walk through houses. And I was so miserable. There was no magic at Colonial Williamsburg.
So this is all about the kids, which is in some ways great. However, your experience at Disney was a little different this time. And you felt like, in a way, it was too much about the kids?
I don't know. I'm still sort of grappling with how, in the end, I feel about it, because in a lot of ways, I respect the sort of magic that Disney has come up with and that a lot of theme parks are coming up with now. So the piece I wrote was about the new Fantasyland, which is this brand new expansion of one of the original parts of the Magic Kingdom, Fantasyland, which if you went as a kid, you remember that's where Dumbo's ride is and the Peter Pan ride, and it's a small world. But they expanded it recently, and the final part of it just opened up this summer. And they almost doubled the size of Fantasyland and gave the park itself a huge amount more acreage. And it includes a bunch of new rides and experiences, which sort of loosely revolve around the princesses, which have become really popular. Although they're not all sort of aimed necessarily only at princess-loving people. Like, both my kids are not that into princesses necessarily, but they still really love this stuff. And one of the reasons they loved it is a lot of the experiences in the new Fantasyland are not rides, but in fact are experiences. They are highly personalized, what I called in the piece, sort of boutique theme park moments generated at engineering a kind of personal one-on-one magic between a kid and a Disney property that in a way that would create these sort of unforgettable moments, the types that Disney World has always tried to create. But this is a much more intense, labor-intensive, single-person, one-to-one creation of that. And so it's fascinating. And the attraction that I ended up focusing on in my piece is called Enchanted Tales with Belle. And it is a sort of very realistic, life-size recreation of Belle's father's cottage from Beauty and the Beast. And you stand in line to get into it. And you go through the living room where there's a picture of Belle and her mom, and there's the little marks on the wall from every year Belle was growing as her father marked her height on the wall. And then you go into his workshop, and then a magic mirror opens up. And the conceit of this attraction is not that you are going on a ride that's taking you through, you know, like the Stations of the Cross of Belle's story. It is that you are walking into her story and meeting Belle herself, and you are doing her a favor. You personally, the guest, are doing her a favor, which is that you're giving her this gift of retelling her story with her, for her, with everyone playing a part. So every kid in this little group of like 30 or 40 people gets to play a role. One of my daughters played the horse, Pierre. One of my daughters played a friendly villager. And all the other kids got roles too. One was Mrs. Potts, and one was Chip, and one was the wardrobe, and one was the beast.
Why does Belle need her story retold? Is there?
Because it's just a nice surprise we're doing for her, because she likes to remember that time, because okay. It was a wonderful time.
She's writing
time.
A memoir.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's that she has become some kind of a dispirited stay-at-home mom, and she just wants to be reminded of the magic her life once held. They didn't go into that. But anyways, the story, then we all get our parts, and it's very low-tech, actually. I mean, it's a mix of high-tech and low-tech. There's this amazing, incredible animatronic wardrobe. Remember the big French wardrobe who has this delightful French voice in the movie? She is there in front of you, and she's animated, and her face is, like, incredibly... I mean, just like an incredible piece of technology. But then her assistants, the people who work there, are just literally handing out cardboard flat faces of a horse and a villager and Mrs. Potts that the kids hold on sticks in front of their faces to play those parts. And to be a horse, Lyra just had to go, nay, and that was it. Like, that was her part. And then we all go into the library, and Belle comes in, and we yell, surprise! And Lumiere tells us all to do the story, and then we just do the story with Belle. We tell her the story, and she oohs and ahs over each kid individually, and then each kid gets to meet her and hug her, and a Disney-approved photographer takes a picture, which you can buy later, and then you walk out. And that's it. And it's like 7 minutes long, but it has created this very intense connection between this actress playing Belle and each individual kid who got to be a part of her story and then got to meet her at the end. And Disney, for many years, has made a real sort of meal out of these character interactions, out of character meetings. There are even designated character meeting spots all over the Magic Kingdom and other parks where, you know, there will always be a character there you can stand in line to meet and get their autograph or just shake hands or take a photo or whatever. But this is a way of sort of essentially mechanizing that process of getting, like, you know, 3 or 4 dozen families through the line in 7 minutes, and all of them to have an incredible, much better experience with Belle than you would have had if you stood in line for an hour and then shook her hand and had an awkward hug and then that was it. And so it was really fascinating to me to see that Disney is starting to perfect this notion of personalized one-on-one magic, enchantment, as the name of the ride suggests, that seems very perfectly in tune with our modern kind of parenting, where we want only the best for our children, and we want that only the best to be specifically attuned to them and their needs. I feel like we're not that interested anymore in the mass experience and making our kids feel lost as one of a crowd. We want them to be very, very special because they are special. They matter to us in that way. And so in some respects, I admire what Disney is doing. In other respects, I sort of miss the way that you could really feel lost in the crowd in Disney World. And I mean, luckily, Disney World still offers plenty of places to get lost in a crowd, but I do get the sense that this is the future of the theme park.
Right? And you noted that it was so personalized that your daughters wore bands, and when they got there, they were greeted by name.
Yeah, so now Disney has this other program that really dovetails with this, which is this My Magic program, which is essentially a ticketing a manner of ticketing and reservation making, but you get these magic bands, these vinyl bands that each member of your party wears, and they have little RFID chips inside them, and you scan them to get into the park, you scan them to get into your hotel, you scan them to do fast passes, which are the advance reservations for certain rides that you are allowed to make so that you don't have to stand in line with the masses. And they have all your information coded on them. So when Lyra and Harper, you know, put their magic bands up to the little light-up magical Mickeys, the people there said, oh, hi, hello, Lyra, hello, Harper, and they welcomed them right in. And my mother-in-law, they were like, oh, I hope you had a great time at Mickey's spectacular not-so-scary Halloween party last night, because it was right there that she was at it the night before. It was on her record. And so, you know, it was really amazing to see the move toward personalization that Disney World is making, because they have the resources and the ability and the technology to personalize in a park where they're still serving and making happy tens of thousands of people a day. Like, it's pretty amazing.
Do you think your kids had a better time with this experience than they would have at the Disney you went to as a kid?
I'm not sure. They really loved Enchanted Tales with Belle. Like, that is something they are still talking about now. But they also really loved Space Mountain.
Yeah.
And their favorite part about Space Mountain, in fact, was the part where after we went with them once, we were like, we're done with Space Mountain, but you guys can go if you want. And so they went by themselves and got lost in that crowd by themselves and were one little face in a sea of people going on this ride where you, in fact, become invisible because you're riding through the dark. And so I think that they really that really got to them as well. So I'm not sure what they loved better and whether this was a more magical experience. I do know that it was certainly an experience that did a better job of convincing them, as many things in their lives convince them, as we convince them basically every day, that they are the center of the story, right? That they are the engine that drives their lives, which is great. I want them to have the kind of self-esteem that engenders, but it also can create some really, really privileged kids who just want what they want and are not interested in anything that isn't tailor-made for them.
Okay, one last question. This is not actually about the experience, but before you left, you made the joke. I think you actually said this on the podcast, and I heard you say it maybe five other times to different people. It was good the first time. But then that you were going to roll your eyes about Disney on social media, but you were actually going to love it.
Yeah.
What is that about? Like, why did you feel that you had to be publicly embarrassed of Disney?
It is not cool to like Disney World, Allison. Are
but
you
why?
Because of all the things that are legit terrible about Disney World, that are terrible about Disney. And the notion of really delighting in a prefab corporation's view of what magic is not that cool. But nevertheless, what I love most about Disney World is how happy my kids were the whole entire time. And if the point of this trip is, as you say, to give yourself over to making your kids happy for a couple of days, then it's totally worth it. And I guess, in a way, that's what Disney is building, an even more efficient way to deliver magic to your children until soon they can just inject magic directly into their brains.
Okay, listeners, we want to hear about your Disney experiences, both when you were young and if you've taken your kids or if you plan to take your kids. Email us at momanddad@slate.com and tell us what you think of Disney, if you're embarrassed for Dan for going or if you think it's awesome.
On to recommendations. Allison.
Dan, have you been reading about Gamergate?
I have been avoiding reading about Gamergate whenever possible.
It's something that I don't even think I want to explain or describe here. I mean, in brief, it's this controversy within the gaming world, video gaming world, where basically a bunch of like horrible men think that everything that's gone wrong with gaming is because women started playing, and they've attacked and threatened some prominent women in gaming. But it's taken on, it's spiraled. But recently there was a piece in The All called The Sad Parents of Gamergate. This is what I'm recommending, which was about parents talking to their kids, their tween and teenage kids, about Gamergate. And their kids' responses were really troubling, to say the least. And so I guess I'm recommending reading that piece. But and also, if your kids are playing video games, they probably know about this. So I'm also recommending talking to your kids about Gamergate.
Yeah, if your kids are on the internet and they also really like video games, they definitely already have an opinion about this. And it's worth weighing in and finding out what that is and having a chat with them, because they are potentially getting their information from really, really stupid sources. My recommendation is is very simple. It is watching The Simpsons with your kids. While we were in Orlando, one of the other things we did at Universal Studios was we went on The Simpsons ride, and the kids thought it was really funny, but they didn't like really know. They were like, oh, that one's Bart, right? And pointing at Maggie. And so when we got home, we just started on it. And I showed them Simpsons roasting on an open fire. And then we skipped straight to Bart the Daredevil, which is the first great episode of season two. And it went great, except for at the end when Homer falls down the mountain and then he gets loaded in the ambulance and then the ambulance drives into a tree and then Homer rolls out and he falls down the mountain again. Lyra and I were laughing and laughing and laughing. And then I looked over at Harper and she had tears streaming down her face as she goes, why would they show that? But it's gotten better now. She now understands that cartoon violence is funny and she's become desensitized. So it's okay.
In a week?
Yeah, it took like a day. It took like one more episode and she was good. So anyways, seasons 2 through 9 are just as awesome as you remember. And I'm having the greatest time watching it with them. And they now are helping my kids ask me important questions about the world, like, why is Jacques Strap funny? And why is Alcoholic funny? And why is Mike Rotch funny? And every time I have to think of a great answer. All right. So that's our show. Please email us at momanddad@slate.com to suggest topics or recommend books or guests or yell at Allison for drinking while she was pregnant or whatever. And if you've got a question you want us to answer on the air, please give us a call at any hour and leave a message at 424-255-RUDE. Please subscribe on iTunes. Just search for Mom and Dad Are Fighting and leave a comment or a rating that helps people find the show. And don't forget that coffee date you're making with your friend to tell her all about the podcast. Our producer is Chris Wade. The executive producer of Slate Podcast is Andy Bowers. And the managing producer, the brand new managing producer, is Joel Meyer. Welcome, Joel. Thank you, Allison.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for listening.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.